Well, Shabbat Shalom again to everybody here, and Shabbat Shalom to anybody who will see this video later or hear the tape. We are actually videoing today and taping. We are at the Hayahad Bible School. We have 2 weeks remaining in our program, and we are on the beautiful Sea of Galilee, or Galil, and we don't say the region of Galilee because Galilee means region. So we are going to be going into a study today, and probably about 5 years ago it is now, maybe even longer, I was listening to the first tape I did on the wilderness, and in the tape I was saying that we hadn't even been out of America a year. So it must be about 6 years ago maybe that I even started this wilderness tape. And I thought about it when I made the tapes on the wilderness to say somewhere down the line I want to have a follow-up, and I just can't believe how fast the years are going by. How quick they're going by. It's just unbelievable that we've been almost 7 years now out of the States, living here in the land for roughly 5 to 6 years on and off, the last 2 years fairly permanently. And the message today is called, How Are You Doing in the Wilderness? How are you doing in the wilderness? And what I was saying in my original wilderness tapes, if you haven't heard them, you can download them on our website, all about the wilderness, that there is a real wilderness that's coming. You know, there's a wilderness that's going to be coming for Yahweh's people, and all of His people are going to go into a wilderness. The bride has one place she's going into, Revelation 12. The 144,000 have a place they're going into, Revelation 14. And then the rest of the Laodiceans have a place they're going into, you know, that we see. That from Revelation 3, but everyone is going to be purified in the wilderness one way or another. And the sad part about it is we're going to see today is, if you go by the first experience of the children of Israel in the wilderness, very, very few people made it. And if we look at the examples of Scripture of all time, you know, you always see a great nation of people or a great amount of people and only a very, very few being saved. Look at Abraham. One man was used out of all those people at that time. Look at Noah. You know, 8 people are saved out of the whole world. You know, look at Sodom and Gomorrah, the same thing. You know, Lot and even his wife, who turned back, got turned into a pillar of salt, and Lot's 2 daughters, you know. So we see that most of the time, we don't ever see this, what we hear in Christianity today, which is false, that everyone is saved. You know, I used to hear this in Jerusalem. Even Arafat was going to be saved, and everyone's going to be saved, and the Father's going to figure out a way to save everybody. And you just don't see it, especially in the end time. I've said this before, if you look in the Scriptures and put them together, more people will be lost in our generation than any other generation in the history of mankind. And because we're part of that generation, and because our minds have been seared with hot irons, and all we know is this generation, we don't see it. You know, we don't see how serious the times are. So what I want to do is I want to give everyone a test today, not a test like we've been taking in school, more of a mental and spiritual test, on how are you doing in the wilderness? You know, how is your wilderness journey coming? And I was saying, what we're in now is a spiritual wilderness in preparation for the real wilderness. Some of us, that real wilderness is going to be, sorry to say, concentration camps. When America goes down, you could read it in Ezekiel 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, people are going to be put in the concentration camps and they're going to get to the Holy Land in the end time by the time Messiah returns in a very bad situation. You know, they're going to have to go through captivity to come into the Holy Land. If you look, we have a tape called Ephraim, My Firstborn, and I go over, if Judah, where there's 14 million Jews today, if they got back to the land at the expense of 6 million in the Holocaust, you know, and you work out the numbers of how many Ephraimites in the world today, what makes us think it's going to be anything less with Ephraim? Especially with the attitude. And the Father says, He names all the countries where these Ephraimites are living, and that they're all going to be judged because of the things they're doing in their captivity. So it's a serious time we're living in, and it's a serious question to ask, how are you doing in the wilderness? So let's start in Psalm 95, because we're going to go over a lot of examples today of the children of Israel in the wilderness to see things that we should learn from their examples. Psalm 95. In verse 6 through 11. It says, O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before Yahweh our Maker. For He is our Elohim, and we are the people of His pasture and the sheep of His hand today. If you will hear His voice, do not harden your heart as in Meribah, as in the day of Massa in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me and tested me, and they saw my work. For 40 years I was disgusted with this generation. Boy, it almost doesn't sound like something Yahweh would even be saying. Being actually disgusted, that's a really strong word, with this generation. And I said, they are a people who err in their heart, and they do not know my ways, to whom I swore in my anger, they shall not enter into my rest. Heavy, heavy scripture. And like I said, a whole generation died in that wilderness who will not be coming. And we went over before, I have a tape called First Fruits in the Wilderness. You can download it on our website. But first fruits are very holy to Yahweh. And if we go to Exodus 13, we'll see this. Firstborn and first fruits. I'm not going to go extensively into this today. Although what I'm really talking about, this message is to the first fruits. The message is to first fruits because it's the first fruits that are in the danger, you know, of losing out on their eternal life. The rest of the dead will not be judged until the 1,000 years are over. But judgment has started on the house of Yahweh. And if it starts on us now, what is the end to the ungodly and the sinner? Exodus 13, 1 and 2. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, set apart every firstborn to me, the one opening every womb among the sons of Israel, among men and among livestock, it shall be to me. And if you drop down to verse 12. You shall set apart to Yahweh everyone opening up the womb, and every firstborn young of the animals which are yours, the males are to Yahweh. And every firstling of an ass you shall redeem with a flock animal. And if you do not redeem it, you shall break its neck. And every firstborn of men among your sons you shall redeem. And it shall be, when your sons ask you in the future, saying, what is this? You shall say to them, Yahweh brought us out of Egypt by the might of his hand from the house of slaves. And it happened, when Pharaoh hardened himself against sending us away, Yahweh killed every firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of men to the firstborn of animals. For this reason, I sacrifice to Yahweh everyone opening up the womb, the males, and I redeem every firstborn of my sons. And we read in another part, where what did Yahweh say to Pharaoh when he told Moses, you go tell Pharaoh, because you wouldn't allow my firstborn out, I am going to kill your firstborn. So really, really serious. And again, in our classes, we went over this extensively, but for the people who may be hearing this message for the first time, we just want to make sure that people understand how serious first fruits are to Yahweh. Everything from the tithe, you know, Genesis 28, where Jacob made the covenant of tithing that said everything, not only agriculture, but everything that you bless me with, I'll give the first tenth to you. Before there's ever Levitical priesthood or anything else, the tithing covenant is made in Genesis 28. And we know the firstborn of men, the firstborn of animals, that all firstborn or first fruits are holy to Yahweh. And it's a serious thing. And we're part of those first fruits and are holy to Yahweh. So when you're corrupting the first fruits, it's a very serious offense to Yahweh. Let's go into a little bit now, I'm going to go over a few scriptures very quickly, just to show you that we are indeed first fruits. If we go to 1 Corinthians 15, we'll see who is the first of the first fruits, that Yeshua is the wave sheaf. So he's not just the first fruit, but he is the first of the first fruit. He is the wave sheaf. And anyone who doesn't know what the wave sheaf ceremony is, we know during unleavened bread, the day when we put the leaven out of our homes, what do? The day after the weekly Sabbath, or Yom Rishon, the first day of the week during unleavened bread, the priest, actually it would be Saturday evening after sunset, he would take the first of the harvest of the barley, and he would take it and he would wave it before Yahweh the Father, and if it was acceptable to Yahweh, that first sheaf, then the whole harvest would be acceptable. And that's what I mean when I say Feast of First Fruits. It's the first day of the week during unleavened bread. So 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 20, it says, but now is Messiah risen from the dead and become the first fruit of them that slept. For since by man came death, by man came also the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, so even so in Messiah will all be made alive. But every man in his order. Messiah, the first fruit, afterward they that are Messiahs at his coming. Okay, so we're all part of that same group, but Yeshua is the actual wave sheaf, and then we are the rest of them. If you go to John, the 20th chapter, John 20, 11 and 12, John 20 and 11 and 12. And this is when Yeshua is resurrected. Look what it says. But Mary Magdalene stood without at the sepulchre weeping. As she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre. And she sees two cherubs in white were sitting, the one at the head and the one at the feet, where the body of Yeshua had lain. Remember what we talked about? Yeshua and his two messengers, one on the right, one on the left. So here they are. One is at the head, one is at the feet, where he lay. And if you drop down to verse 16, then Yeshua said to her, Mary, and she turned herself and said to him, Rabboni, what is to say, Master. And Yeshua said, Touch me not, for I have not yet ascended to my Father, but go to my brethren and say unto them, I ascend to my Father and your Father and my Elohim and your Elohim. And just like we were saying last night, in one of the Bible questions, that our reward is to be a literal child in the family of Elohim. And that's why he's saying it's not only his Elohim anymore, now that the resurrection happened. My Elohim and your Elohim, my Father and your Father. But he had to go to heaven to be that first fruit, to be that wave sheaf, to be accepted before all the rest of them could be accepted. Romans 11, just quickly. Romans 11, and one verse 16. It says, For if the first fruit is holy, the lump also is holy. And if the root be holy, so are the branches. So again, if Yeshua's sacrifice is accepted, then the first fruits will be accepted. If the first fruit is holy, so is the lump. And we are all part of that body of Messiah. John 12, the last one on this point. John the 12th chapter, verse 24 and 25. Verse 23, actually, Yeshua answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say to you, except a corn of wheat fall to the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it die, it brings forth much fruit. He that loves his life shall lose it, and he that hates his life in this world shall keep it unto eternal life. So, very clearly, except a corn of wheat fall to the ground and die, it abides alone, but if it dies, it brings forth much fruit. Yeshua, by being the wave sheaf, his sacrifice brought salvation for many. And Revelation 14, the last one showing that definitely we are first fruits. Revelation 14 and verse 4, talking about the 144,000, was to say, These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to Yahweh and to the Lamb. So without a doubt, you know, believers that are in the first resurrection are the first fruits. Yeshua is the wave sheaf and all the rest of the first fruits. But like he said, we don't all have the same job or the same glory. There's one glory to the sun and one to the moon and one to the stars, and the same is the resurrection. You know, you have the woman, you have the 144,000, you have the guests, you have the Laodiceans, the rest of the first fruit. There's going to be different segments, the same way Yeshua had the 70, he had the 12, he had the 3. So same situations. But without a doubt, we're first fruits. Now the scary part when you're looking into this, how are you doing in the wilderness? I mean, if you look in the Bible, and I suggest everybody do a study on this, if you look at all the firstborn of first fruits, in every single situation without fail, they failed. Every single one. Look at Cain and Abel. You know, Cain failed, he killed Abel, and who had to take over? Seth. Seth had to be the redeemed child. It was Seth who took over. Esau and Jacob. You know, Esau, and we're going to talk more about him later. What did he do? He had the birthright promise. We should be sitting here talking about the sons of Esau, not the sons of Jacob. But he despised his birthright and sold it for a bowl of porridge. And when you're asking yourself how you're doing in the wilderness, you got to ask this question. Are you selling your birthright short? Are you doing it? I mean, we're reading here, not fantasies, we're reading reality, that there's been 50 billion people that have lived on this earth since Adam, and you are one in a million that the Father has chosen for this calling and this priesthood. One in a million. And what are you doing with it? What are you doing with it? You know, are you like Esau? Are you just like, okay, you know, I'm baptized, let me go back to my job. Or does this calling mean something? Does your priesthood mean something? Are you working your priesthood? And we've talked a lot about that here. But important questions to ask. Reuben and Joseph, same thing. Reuben was the firstborn. 1 Chronicles 5:1, but what did he do? He lost his right over what? Taking his father's concubine. And what you'll notice is, in almost every case where the firstborn lost their right, it was over something stupid of the flesh. It wasn't even a good reason. It was over lust. It was over some kind of fleshly, stupid reason that they wound up losing the right of the firstborn. But it should scare us. It should scare us to see that all firstborns have failed, and then what does it say in the end time? We're all firstborn. It should at least wake our eyes up to say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to fall in the same category that these people fell in. The difference being is, all of these were fleshly people who fell to the flesh. Now we have the spirit that we don't have to fall into the same diverse temptations as they. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10, I'm going to start in verse 1. Starting to smell real good in here. Smell the lunch already. 1 Corinthians, starting in verse 1, 1 Corinthians 10, starting in verse 1, he says, I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of the spiritual rock following, and that rock was the Messiah. Yet Yahweh was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the desert. But these things were examples for us, that we may not be lusters after evil, even as those indeed lusted, neither be idolaters, even as some of them had been written. The people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Nor should we commit fornication, as some of them fornicated, and 23,000 fell in one day. Neither overtempt the Messiah, as some of them tempted, and perished by serpents. Neither should you murmur, as some of them murmured, and perished by the destroyer. And all of these happened to those as examples, and it was written for our warning, on whom the ends of the ages have come. So this is written for the last generation, remember. The first generation in the wilderness, and now we're the last generation to bring it in. And that's the one it's written for. It's not written for people 500 years ago, or 1,000 years ago. It's written for the last generation to come, on whom the ends of the ages have come, so that he who thinks to stand, take heed, and watch that he not fall. Anybody here saying, oh, it's not me. It's not me. I'm doing great in the wilderness. I'd never do this. I couldn't fall into this. You know, I'm not going to cause these kind of same kind of things. We have to realize that these examples are for us today to start to look at. And when you look at the body of Messiah and you see all the problems in the body of Messiah, you could see as a body we are failing miserably at these things. And each one of these can be a sermon in themselves. But we are going to go over it today in a general way. So all these things were for our examples. And the main example of what it's saying is, they didn't have a desire. They were like Esau. They didn't see this pearl of great price in their calling. They just didn't see it. Let's go to Luke 14. Luke, the 14th chapter. And starting in verse 16. But he said to them, a certain man made a great supper and invited many. And he sent his slave at the supper hour to say to those who had been invited, come, for now all is ready. And with one mind they began to beg off. The first said, I have bought a field and I need to go out and see it. I ask you, have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen, I'm going to try them out. I ask you, have me excused. And another said, I married a wife, and for this reason I am not able to come. And having come up, that slave reported these things to his master. Then being angry, the housemaster said to his slave, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor and the maimed and the lamed and the blind ones. And the slave said, sir, it has been done as you ordered, and still there is room. And the master said to the slaves, go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in, so that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of those men who had been invited shall taste of my supper. And great crowds came together to hear him. And turning he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not love less his father, mother, wife, children, brothers and sisters, and also his own soul, too, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his stake and come after me, he is not able to be my disciple. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has the things to finish? That having laid a foundation, not having strength to finish all, those seeing begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and did not have strength to finish. Or what king going to attack another king in war does not first sit down and counsel whether he is able with 10,000 to meet those coming with 20,000? But if not, he still being afar off, sending a delegation, he asks the things for peace. So then, every one of you who does not abandon all his possessions is not able to be my disciple. Salt is good, but the salt becomes tasteless with what it is being seasoned. Salt is good, but if the salt becomes tasteless, with what will it be seasoned? It is not fit for soil, nor for fertilizer. They throw it out. The one having ears to hear, let him hear. So very clearly, you know, one of the things you have to ask in the wilderness, have you counted the cost? Have you counted the cost of what it's going to take you to get from here into the kingdom? Do you think it's a doctrine? Do you think it's belonging to some kind of church or some kind of organization like I used to? You know, we're going to get a call 3 in the morning and everyone's going to go to the airport and get on a plane and we're all going to fly over to Petra. That was what we believed for 25 years, probably longer. What is it? What is it that you think you're going to need to get into that kingdom? Well, he tells us right here. It's nothing less than 100% commitment. Absolutely nothing less. And I was saying the other day, I'll say it again, we need to move on from the elementary teachings of the Messiah. We need to start getting into the mystery of the gospel and really seeing the spiritual things the Father wants us to learn before his kingdom comes. But many are rejecting the invitation to the wilderness. And I've heard people say, you know, everyone wants to know, but what's the year? When do you think? When is it? When is it? And I'm very, very cautious not to set dates because the Father says no man knows the day or the hour. But he doesn't say we don't know the week or the month. And we do know the time we're in. There's no doubt. Anybody who doesn't believe we're in the end time, like I said before, get on your hands and knees and repent. Because if you can't see we're in the end time with all the things happening, you're way off in left field. But how many are rejecting that invitation? What they want to know is, oh, if it ain't going to happen until 2020 or 2015 or 2012, then I got a few more years. So what they want to do is they want to live in their life in Babylon. They want to work to the flesh. They want to have all these physical things. And then the minute before the train is going to hit the other train, to dive off of it. And the Father is not going to be mocked, as we're going to see from the children in the wilderness. And even when Moses pleaded for their life, what did he say? He said, okay, I won't kill them, but I will judge everyone who has done evil to me. He's not going to be mocked. And he's giving us this time in the spiritual wilderness to prepare for the real wilderness. And if we're not taking advantage of it, that day is going to come on us unaware. And will there be people that comes on unaware? Absolutely. It says a whole generation is going to be caught unaware. And they should be scary scriptures. A whole generation will be caught unaware. The Son of Man comes an hour when you least expect him. How could that be? We're always expecting him. What does it tell you? Unless these days be short, no flesh would be saved. If possible, even the elect would be deceived. We're hitting into the most serious, hard time the world has ever known since the days of Adam's creation. And it's time we have to start taking the wilderness serious. And like I said, it's not, oh, a spiritual wilderness, okay, that means I can do what I want to do until this. No, that's not what it's for. The Father knows you could never go from your lifestyle into West to living in a wilderness with no food, with no water, with no refrigerators, with no air conditioning, with no heaters, with no clothing. He knows you can't do that. And he's giving you this time to little by little get rid of these things in your life. But sorry to say, it's been 6 years since I first talked on the wilderness. I don't see enough people preparing for the wilderness as they should. I see more than I did 6 years ago, which praise the Father for it. But there's still thousands upon thousands of brethren in the West that are living the same life they lived 6 years ago. If anything, their life has gotten worse because the society there has gotten worse. And since internet and all these things with all these gadgets that they're coming out with, people are just getting more and more of these gadgets and getting more into pleasure seeking and all these things with it. And they're not striving toward holiness. For without, no one will see Yahweh. And that's one of the main reasons for the wilderness, sanctification. You cannot be sanctified to Yahweh when you're living in Satan's system. You can't be. And the early believers, I mean, for the 1260 years in the wilderness, they did it to sanctify themselves to stay away. Is it going to be a sacrifice? Of course. Are you going to maybe make less money than you would have? Of course. Will you have less things? Of course. But what is the result? Stronger family ties. Better marital relationships. Better congregational relationships. You know, and you choose. Each one of you are going to leave here in a couple of weeks. You're going to choose. Everyone listening to this video, thousands of people will see it, are going to make a choice. And you're going to have to make a choice now in these few short years remaining before Yeshua comes. What is your goal? Is it going to be toward physical things and the house, the money, and the 2.3 children? Or is it going to be toward let's get the work done? Let's get the work done. Let's purify ourselves and get Yahweh's work done. And that's a choice that every individual is going to make. And the choices you make today will depend on what wilderness you're going to be in tomorrow. So like I said, every one of us is going to go through it one way or another. I don't want to go through the concentration camp wilderness. That's not the one I want to go through. Because it'll be the bitterest and most hardest. I said, if you look in the Bible, you have three fleeing plans. You have the Abraham plan. Abraham, get up and walk. Abraham gets up and walk. And what does he do? He brings everything he has. He brings his family, his slaves, his household, all his possessions. Then you have the children of Israel. You know, leave quickly. They couldn't even have their dough rise, but they still took spoils of Egypt. But they had to move more quickly. Then you have the third plan, the Lot plan. That's not the plan I suggest. Get out of here now or die. He took the clothes on his back. We don't want to go through the wilderness on the Lot plan. We really don't want to go through on the Lot plan. So, very, very important here. Let's go to Numbers 20. And let's start seeing some of the mistakes these people made in the wilderness. Numbers, the 20th chapter. I'll start in verse 1. I'll read 1 through 5. Numbers 20 and verse 1. And the sons of Israel, even the whole congregation, came in the wilderness of Zin in the first month. And the people remained in Kadesh. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation. And they would gather it against Moses and against Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "Oh, that we had died when our fathers died before Yahweh. And why have you brought the assembly of Yahweh to this wilderness to die here, we and our animals? And why have you brought us up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place, not a place of seed, nor fig, nor vine, nor pomegranate, and there is no water to drink?" Did you imagine these people are being led directly by Yahweh? They're getting manna in the wilderness, food from heaven, angels' food, cherub food every day. And they're saying, "Why did you bring us to this evil place?" Evil? Who picked the place out? Yahweh. Who were they griping against? Moses? No. They're griping against Yahweh. Yahweh was the one who chose. Just like here, Yahweh chose the school. Yahweh chose our building. Yahweh chose everything. And praise the Father, we got an awesome group that's very thankful to be here and thankful for the things. But we have to realize in our life, when we complain, when we gripe, we're not griping against man. We're not griping against our husband. We're not griping against our pastor. We're griping against Yahweh. We are griping against Yahweh because in any given situation that you're in today, He provided it for you. The clothes you're wearing, the food you're eating, the place you're sitting, the people you're going to meet, every single thing, even if it's a trial for purification, Yahweh provided that. And when we murmur, which is one of the things that kept them out of the kingdom, and I'm telling you, as Israelites, it's in our blood, we have to get that murmuring out. We have to get the murmuring out. I've heard people in the West, some of the reasons that they're doing the things they're doing or in congregations. I mean, I'm shocked when I go there and hear that Sabbath keepers are still going to Sunday churches at times. I hear that people are working on Shabbat, even on holy days. If it's convenient, they'll come on a holy day. If they have to work, they won't. What covenant are we under? What covenant are we under? You know that we're doing these things. And I say, you are much better in the wilderness because the Father took us to this wilderness. Don't complain if there's only two or three people sitting next to you each Sabbath. Don't complain. Be thankful that you have two or three people. And if you're by yourself, be thankful that you have Yahweh. Because in the wilderness, as we're going to see, it's Yahweh who's going to talk to us face to face. And we need to get in our life where we are content with me and Yahweh. If you are looking for a human being to give you contentment, you'll never be contentment. Doesn't mean we can't have spouses that we love, or children that we love, or friends that we love. Of course. But what it is your contentment in life has got to come between your relationship with the Father. Because another human being will never, ever, ever be able to give you the comfort that your real bridegroom can give you. It's never going to happen. Human being could be with you, a human being could be comfort to you, a human being could be share things with, be a friend, but a human being will never ever give you the comfort that Yeshua, the real bridegroom, can give. And if we're in the wilderness, and the Father's taking us out of these corporate churches and bringing us into our living room, into this wilderness, and you're going back to these congregations that have every kind of heresy, every kind of wrong thing, because you want fellowship, because my children need kids to play with, you are not going to make it in the wilderness. Better is a little in the house of the righteous than many with, you know, the wicked. Many riches with the wicked. And like I said, if you have two or three, be thankful you have two or three. If it's just you or you and your spouse, you got Yahweh there every week. And I'm telling you, you'll learn more. The less people you have, the more you're going to learn. The more people you have, it gets very complicated. And some of these big groups are useless anyway. They're learning nothing. So who is your fellowship with? Our fellowship is with the Father and the Son. And if we're only going somewhere just for the sake of having bodies that are breathing in front of us, there's more Catholics than any other religion in the world. Do we go back to that? Yahweh forbid. Of course not. He's taking us out of those places. Come out of her, my people, that you not partake in their sins and receive of her plagues. He's calling us out of that so we can be in the wilderness so he can talk to us face to face. That's what he's looking for. Elijah, Eliyahu, John the Baptist, Moses, Yeshua, they all went to the wilderness to prepare for their commission. This is a type of wilderness for each of you. You don't need as much as you thought you did, and there's thousands of reasons to see blessings in the wilderness. And we talked about reframing. And being here is a type of wilderness for everybody that's here. Because you're out of your normal surroundings, you're out of your normal jobs, your normal cares, your normal responsibilities. And this 3 months is a wilderness experience. And hopefully, this 3 months is only going to be the beginning of your wilderness. Or if you've already been in the wilderness when you came, it's just going to enhance your wilderness experience. By having time to get better prayer and study habits and whatever else the Father's teaching you while you're here. But, you know, talking about reframing, there's 1,000 reasons a day for us to praise Yahweh. 1,000 reasons. And in the wilderness, you have to turn that griping into blessing. You know, instead of sitting there saying, oh, it's only 5 of us over here, you have to say, what a blessing, there's only 5. When I see all the heresy that's out there, when I see all the confusion, when I see all the fighting, praise you, Yahweh, there's only 5 of us. Just reframe it. Reframe the situation to something positive. We go to Deuteronomy 9. Deuteronomy 9, I'll start in verse 7. Deuteronomy 9, 7 and 8. It says, remember, do not forget how you made Yahweh your Elohim angry in the wilderness. Even from the day you came out from the land of Egypt until you came into this place, you have been rebellious against Yahweh. Even in Horeb, you made Yahweh angry, and Yahweh showed himself angry against you to destroy you. We don't want to be in that category. You know, there's a message I'm working on. Which camp are you in? You know, it's coming in a time where you have all these camps out there. You have to decide which camp you want to be in. And you certainly don't want to be in the camp that Yahweh's destroying. You don't want to be in the camp that Yahweh gets angry and is destroying. And who is he destroying? The ones who are lusting, the ones living to the flesh, the ones who are murmurers, the ones that lack faith. These are the ones who he's angry with in the end time. Exodus 32. Exodus, the 32nd chapter. Verse 7 through 10, then I'll drop down to 19. And this is again the golden calf. And let's look at what Yahweh said to these people. Exodus 32 and verse 7. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, come, go down, for your people whom you've caused to come up from Egypt are corrupted. I always get a kick out of that. It's like in a family, you know, when you have a husband and a wife, and when they do something good, it's my child, and when they do something bad, it's your child did this, you know, and that's what Yahweh's saying. Moses, these children that you brought out from here, they've corrupted themselves. They have quickly turned off from the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a casted calf and have bowed to it and have sacrificed to it. And they have said, these are your Elohim, O Israel, who made you go up from the land of Egypt. And Yahweh said to Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, It is a stiff-necked people. Are we in that category? You know, has Yahweh showed you something in your life over and over and over where you have to change? Has He showed you something you're doing over and over and over that's wrong, and you still won't see it? You still won't see it. You're still doing the same pattern, and He's saying, you know, like here, they are a stiff-necked people. Drop down to verse 19, and we'll see the result. And it happened as he came near to the camp and saw the calf and the dances. This is when Moses comes down now from the mountain. The anger of Yahweh glowed, and he threw the tablets from his hands, and he broke them before the mountain. And he took the calf which they have made and burned it with fire and ground it into the fine. Then he scattered it on the face of the water, and he made the sons of Israel to drink it. Pretty interesting, huh? What is your golden calf? We have a message we did last year over here at the school. I think we have it on the website. You know, leaving your golden calf behind. What is the golden calf in your life? Is it the security of a person? Is it money? Is it a job? Is it the house you live in? What's your golden calf? Because whatever your golden calf is, you got to get rid of it. And what is Yahweh? Look what He did. He made them grind it into powder and drink it. What does that tell you? That our golden calf, it's not just going to disappear. It's going to be with bitterness that you're going to get rid of that calf. It doesn't just disappear out of your life. It's going to be with bitterness. So whatever your golden calf is, you better start working on getting rid of that thing and realize it may not be easy. There's going to be purification by fire, but you've got to get rid of it. You've got to grind down into powder and get rid of the golden calf. And Moses said to Aaron, "What has this people done to you that you have come, that you have made to come on this great sin?" And Aaron said, "Let not the anger of my master glow. You know the people and that they are evil. And they said to me, 'Make for us gods who will go before us.' As for Moses, this man caused us to go up from the land of Egypt. We do not know what became of him. And I said to them, 'Whoever has gold, let him tear off.' And they gave to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. And Moses saw the people, that it was unloosed or naked. And Aaron had let it loose for a scornful whispering among their enemies. And Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, 'Who is for Yahweh come to me?' And all the sons of Levi assembled to him. And he said to them, 'So says Yahweh Elohim of Israel, each one put on his sword on his thigh, pass over to and fro from the gate in the camp, and each one kill his brother, and each one his neighbor, and each one his kindred.' And the sons of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell on that day. And Moses said, 'Fill your hand today for Yahweh, since each one has been against his brother, his son, and against his brother, in order to give you a blessing today.' And it happened on the morrow, Moses said to the people, 'You have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up to Yahweh. Perhaps I can make atonement for your sin.' And Moses went back to Yahweh and said, 'Oh, this people has sinned a great sin, and they have made for themselves Elohim of gold. And now if you will lift up, their sin. And if not, I pray, blot me from your book that you have written.'" Again, Moses being an intercessor here. "And Yahweh said to Moses, 'Whoever has sinned against me, he I will blot out from my book. And now go, lead the people to that place that I have spoken to you. Behold, my Malak, my messenger, will go before your face. And in the day of my visitation, I will visit their sin on them.' And Yahweh plagued the people because they made the calf that Aaron made." So like I said, the fact, like it says in Ecclesiastes, because immediate judgment is not on men, it's in their hearts continuously to do evil. You know, the fact that we're not seeing immediate judgment for our actions does not make it right. And what does Yahweh say? He's not going to be mocked. "I will visit those people. I will visit their sin." And if He is calling us in the wilderness face to face and we are not listening, it is going to be a hard, hard time when that happens. And I'm telling you, the same way that Moses said, "Those on Yahweh's side come to me," you're seeing this. He is starting to separate the wheat from the chaff. And it's getting to the point that He's calling His people that are living by faith, come out of it and come to this side and leave the other ones alone. And if you were staying on the side of the people that are living in sins, that have all kinds of evil stuff going on in their congregations, that are not living by the Torah, and you're part of that, you are going to be corrupted with it and you're going to perish with it. Because He says, "I will not be mocked. I will not be mocked, and I'm going to visit on these people for their sins." You look, it's pretty interesting. You know, Moses goes up the mountain. What does he do? He takes them out of Egypt. They see the greatest miracles ever. They see the parting of the Red Sea. And the minute Moses goes up the mountain, what happens? They go right back to Egypt. They go back to the only thing they knew. making a golden calf. That was nothing new to them. They were all over Egypt. As a matter of fact, in the real Mount Sinai today in Saudi Arabia, on the altar that was probably used for this, they have hieroglyphics of cows from the 14th dynasty from Egypt that are over there. So what did they do? The minute Moses was gone, they went right back to the only thing they knew, worldliness, Egypt. You know, iron sharpens iron as a man sharpens his friends. If we are around worldly people, we're going to be worldly. We're going to do the same thing. 1 Corinthians 14:33, bad communications ruin good habits. We want to make sure that we're not falling into that trap. The Laodiceans are making a golden calf in the wilderness. They are building it because they have no faith to see Elohim. See, they needed to physically see something. They had to see a calf and look and say, that's my Elohim. So what does Hebrews 11 say? Faith is the evidence of things not seen. We don't need to see a picture of Yahweh to know He exists. What do? We see His existence in all His creation. We should see it manifested in each of us, the changes in our life. And these people, the Laodiceans, the ones that lack faith, they don't. They have to physically look at something in order to believe. And you're never going to get through the end time if that's the case. Because you're going to make a golden calf that's going to have to be destroyed. And it's just like addicts, whether it's drugs, alcohol, whatever, that addicts go back to the substance abuse because it's all they know. It's the only thing they know. They lust after worldliness. The wilderness is to draw you only to Yahweh, to break any addiction. Could be anything from physical addictions like we talked about, sugar, TV, all these things, to spiritual addictions, pride, anger, whatever. But the wilderness is to draw you away only to Yahweh. That's what it's about. Like the tape I did on our website called Chosen Faithful, many are called, few are chosen, few are faithful, the baptism of water, spirit, and fire. And the only way you're going to make it through the wilderness is going through the baptism of fire. We have to be purified through our trials. If we go to Ezekiel 20, let's look, because this is a really, really interesting scripture in Ezekiel 20. It talks about the first wilderness that we've been talking about, but then it parallels it with our time, with the wilderness and the end time. And we'll see a few things here about it that are very interesting. Ezekiel 20, I'm going to start in verse 2 and go down to 24. And this will be about the first wilderness. It says, and the word of Yahweh was to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the elders of Israel and say to them, So says Yahweh Adonai, have you come to inquire of me? As I live, declares Yahweh Adonai, I will not be inquired of by you. Will you judge them? Will you judge, son of man? Cause them to know the abominations of their fathers, and say to them, So says Yahweh Adonai, in the day I chose Israel, and lifted my hand to the seed of the house of Jacob, and I was made known to them in the land of Egypt, when I lifted up my hand to them, saying, I am Yahweh your Elohim. In the day I lifted up my hand to them to bring them from the land of Egypt into a land that I have searched out for them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of it is to all the lands. Then I said to them, Let each man cast away the filthy idols of his eyes, and do not defile yourself with the idols of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. But they rebelled against me and would not listen to me. They did not each man throw away the filthy idols of their eyes, and they did not forsake the idols of Egypt. Are we forsaking the idols of Babylon? I mean, when you look, like I said, in the world and in the congregations, there is no difference these days. Divorce is the same. Abortion's going on. Every kind of adultery, I mean, it's the same. Whether it's the congregation or it's the world, it's the same thing. Idolatry, people living for money, living for material things. You know, watching godless movies and videos and TV. You see very little difference today, sad to say, in a lot of the congregations of the world. And what does he say then? Then I said, I will pour out my fury against them to fulfill my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. Verse 9. But I worked for my name's sake, that it would not be profaned in the eyes of the nations among whom they were. For I made myself known to them in their eyes by bringing them out of the land of Egypt. So I made them leave from the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. And I gave them my statutes and I made them know my judgments. For if a man does them, he will even live in them. Also I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Yahweh, who sets them apart. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes, and they despised my judgments, which if a man does, he will even live in them. And they greatly profaned my Sabbaths. Then I said, I will pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them. But I worked for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned in the eyes of the nations, before whom I brought them out in their eyes. And I lifted up my hand to them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given, flowing with milk and honey. It is the glory of all the lands. Because they despised my judgments, they did not walk in my statutes, and they profaned my Sabbaths. For their heart went after their idols. And again in the West, it's the same way today. Tons of idols. And my eyes spared them from destroying them, and I did not make an end of them in the wilderness. But I said to their sons in the wilderness, do not walk in the statutes of your fathers, and do not keep your judgments, and do not defile yourself with your idols. I am Yahweh your Elohim, walk in my statutes, and keep my judgments, and do them. And keep my Sabbaths holy, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am Yahweh your Elohim. But the sons rebelled against me, they did not walk in my statutes, and did not keep my judgments to do them, which if a man does them, he will even live on them. They profaned my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them to fulfill my anger against them in the wilderness. But I withdrew my hand and acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned in the eyes of the nations from whom I brought out their eyes. Brought them out in their eyes. And I lifted up my hand to them in the wilderness to scatter them among the nations and sow them among the lands, because they had not done my judgments and had despised my statutes and had profaned my Sabbaths. And their eyes were after their father's idols. And here we are today. He's telling us. The people in the wilderness didn't make it. The children that he brought into the promised land, they didn't make it. And what happened? Over and over and over. Same mistake. So he had to cast them into the nations. 2,700 years later, here we are. What are we doing this Thursday evening? We're fasting for this. We're fasting for the land and trying to go back to the Torah, that the Father will open up the gates to bring his people back. But before you come back to the land, you're going to have to go through the wilderness. That's what he's telling us. Each one failed. He says the only way to get here is to come through the wilderness. He could have brought them very easily. He could have went from Egypt, the way of the Philistines, right into the Holy Land. They didn't have to go to the wilderness. But it's his will, because there's got to be purification before the promised land. Every single person has got to go through the wilderness. And the first ones failed, the second ones failed, the children failed, and their children failed. And now here's the last generation. There will be one more literal wilderness experience. And he's telling us, are you going to make it or aren't you? Now let's look at our wilderness. Let's look what he says now about the end time wilderness. Drop down to verse 33. Because he says he sent them in diaspora, and now he's talking about gathering them back. Verse 33. Starting 32. And what comes up on your spirit shall surely not occur, that you say, we will be like the nations, like the families of the lands, to serve wood and stone. Are we saying that in the wilderness? Do we want to be like the nations? I find it real interesting. To serve wood and stone? What do the Christians have? The cross they all pray to? What do the Muslims? They all pray to that stone they have? The Jews have their wailing wall? Idols of stone and wood. And the wailing wall is an idol. It's an idol. People should not be bowing down and praying to a wall. It's not scriptural. And he's asking, do we want this? Is our spirit saying in the wilderness, we want to be like the other people? And look what he says, verse 33. As I live, says Yahweh Adonai, surely with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm and with fury pulled out, I will reign over you. He's going to do it. He said it. One way or the other, he's going to reign over us. Do we want it with a hand stretched out in fury? Or do we want a gentle shepherd's staff? It's our choice. It's our choice. It's depending on how much we fight him is how much he's going to have to fight us in the wilderness. And I will bring you out from the people and gather you from the lands in which you were scattered among them. We're seeing it start to happen already. With a mighty hand and an outstretched arm and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people. We're just starting to see the very beginning of this. And I will be judging with you there face to face. Those on Yahweh's side come to me. Those over there. He's going to bring us. There's going to be a real wilderness. And he is going to judge us face to face. Just as I was judging your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so I will be judging you, declares Yahweh Adonai. This has not happened yet. And I will cause you to pass under the rod. You know what that means? The shepherd would have his staff. And every sheep would have to pass because he knows everyone by name. So he's going to cause us to go under that shepherd's staff. And he's going to count each one of us. He knows the hairs on our head. I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. And I will purge from among you the rebels and the transgressors against me. We're going to have another situation in the wilderness. There'll be another Korah and Abiram and Og. And they're going to be in the wilderness saying, we don't need leaders. It's me and Yahweh. You take too much upon yourself. We all have the Spirit. We're doing it our way. And you're going to see fire come down from heaven and destroy these people. What side do you want to be on? And I will purge from among you the rebels and the transgressors against me, and I will bring them out of the land where they sojourn. And they shall not enter into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. Wow. I'll continue. And you, O house of Israel, says Yahweh Adonai, every man go serve his idols even hereafter, if you will not listen to me. But if you will not still profane my holy name with your gifts and with your idols, for in my holy mountain, in the mountain height of Israel, declares Yahweh Adonai, all the house of Israel shall serve me there, all of them in the land. There I will accept them, and there I will seek your heave offerings in the first fruits of your offerings. Back to the importance of first fruits. With all your holy things. I will accept you with a soothing aroma, and I will bring you from the people and gather you from the lands where you have been scattered in them. And I will be sanctified among you in the eyes of the nations. And you shall know that I am Yahweh when I bring you into the land of Israel, to the land for which I lifted up my hand to give to your fathers. And you shall remember there your ways and your deeds which you have been defiled when you were in the nations. And you will hate yourself to your faces for all the evils which you have done. And I feel it now. I despise the things I did in my past. Before I came into the truth, the useless idols, the idolatry. And you shall know that I am Yahweh when I have worked with you for my name's sake, and not by your evil ways, nor by your corrupt deeds, O house of Israel, declares Yahweh Adonai. Wow. So what is he saying? He's not leaving anybody in the lands where they went to. Everyone's going to leave their lands where they were put in diaspora. But everyone's got to go through the wilderness. And which way? And he's going to bring these people to the wilderness, and he is going to purge out the rebels from among them. And it's a scary thought because we already have Korah and Abiram and Og. We already have the situation. We already know what happened to them. And you are going to see it again. There's going to be a second wilderness like that, a physical thing, where the Father himself, because he says, he will be there pleading with us face to face. And he will purge the rebels out. And none of those people will get into the promised land. You know, I read this and I think, I don't know where I'll be in that day, but thank you, Yahweh, that I'm here today. Thank you, knowing so many people will not even have the blessing to see this land now. Because he says, I don't want you here. And that each and every one of us, he's blessed to be here. What a blessing. Like I said, in that day, who knows? Who knows if I'll be alive or dead or wherever. But I'm here today. I'm here in his land. I'm smelling the breath of the promised land. What a blessing that is. One day in your house is better than 1,000 days without. But a serious thing to think about. This is going to happen literally. He said it. He said every generation's got to come through the wilderness. And what failed the first time will not fail the second time. And there is going to be a remnant that will make it through that wilderness. It's just a matter of we're one of them. What side do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the side that is being purged? Or do you want to be on the side that's for Yahweh? And he wants all of us. It's not his will to any to perish. So it's not a thing where you say, well, you know, it's already been set down. There's nothing I can do. No. He says it's not that any should perish, but that the wicked would turn from their ways and repent. And I'm telling you, the more we come out of the world, the more we focus toward him, our life will be different. It'll be changed. You can't keep one foot in the world and one foot here. You can't serve two masters and think that you are going to make it through this wilderness that's coming. Let's go to Numbers 13. Numbers 13, I'm going to move along. See a few more things here about the wilderness. Numbers 13, 17 through 20, it says, And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said to them, You go up in this way into the Negev, and go into the hills, and you will see the land, what it is, and the people who are living in it, whether it is strong or feeble, whether it is few or many, and what the land is in which you live, whether good or bad, and what are the cities in which they live, whether in camps or in fortresses, and what the land is, whether it is fat or lean, whether wood is there or not, and you will make yourself strong, and shall take of the fruit of the land. And it was the days of the first ripe grapes. It's the feast of the first fruits. This is the time of the first fruits. And what's happening? He's saying, go in the land now. He's sending out the spies like us. You know, you are one of many, many thousands that have been blessed to be here. And what do you do when you go back? What kind of report are you going to give? What kind of report are we going to give when we go back there? It was the time of the first ripe figs. If you go to Matthew 12, I just want to read something very quickly. Matthew 12, 12 through 14. Talking about this first ripe fruit. It says, and they sought to seize him. Mark 12, what am I doing here? Mark 11, verse 12. You know, I had it close to here. Third time's a charm. Mark 11 and verse 12. And on the morrow, they going out from Bethany, he hungered, and seeing afar off a fig tree having leaves, he went toward it, if perhaps he would find anything on it. And coming on it, he found nothing except leaves, for it was not the time of figs. And Yeshua said to it, let no one eat of your fruit any more forever. And the disciples heard, and then the next day it was cursed. Let no one eat on your food forever. You know, is this indicative of those first fruits in the wilderness? Because remember, it's very interesting. Who is the fig tree? Israel, right? Matthew 24, watch the fig tree. And the fig tree is the only tree that in the spring, when the fruit comes out, the leaves and the fruit come out at the same time. And it shows how quick things are going to happen in the end time. This generation will not pass till all come fulfilled. So it's not your normal thing. You're not first getting the leaf, and then you're getting the fruit, and then the fulfillment, and then it's ready. It's happening together. It's happening quickly. So what is he saying when he looks at this early fig, this pagay, they call it, and there's nothing there? He's saying, hey, this is now the end. He's getting ready to die. And he wants this first fruit, and they're not ready. And he's saying, cursed be you. Cursed be you forever. And we're in those days today. I mean, the time is running, the hourglass is going. We're 5 to midnight. The Father can't wait anymore. The plan is being fulfilled. The wedding supper has already been set. The invitations are going out. Are you taking the invitation or not? It is time to stop playing games. Do we want to be like this? Do we want to be where he said, look, I've given you all this time. You know, you look at the parable about, you know, the tree, and what did he say? Well, give it one more year and fertilize it. Has he already been giving us maybe 2 or 3 extra years after that? We're getting close to that time where time is running out. It is the time to stop playing games and the time to get serious with what's been given to us. And stop worrying about money. Stop worrying about what I'm going to do. Just read Matthew 6 every day, because Yeshua gives us his assurance we do not have to worry about those things. And if he gives us his assurance, we could take it to the bank. And if we don't trust him that all these things will be provided if we follow our priesthood, then we're not worthy of that priesthood. We have to start believing him at his word. And we have to start getting our focus on being a first fruit. That's got to be the only thing in our life that we're focused on. And everything else is peripheral around it. Our main focus has got to be the honor of being that first fruit. Now let's go back to Numbers 13. Read the rest of it. Because here it is, it's the time of first fruits. They go into the land. And what is Yahweh saying? You've been around this wilderness long enough. Go into the land. Go ahead. And he sends the first fruits, right? The ones that were like the wave sheaf, the first of the first fruits. He sends them in, one from each tribe, to get a good report, to come back to the people and say, yeah, this has been given by Yahweh. Let's go and take it. And let's look at their report. Verse 24 of Numbers 13. That place was called the Torrent of Eshkol because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut from there. And we know the grapes, like the bananas we found here, they had to carry it on a pole and carry it in. And we've been blessed the same way here on the Sea of Galilee. And they returned from spying out the land, verse 25, at the end of the 40 days. And they traveled and came into Moses and Aaron, into the tabernacle of the congregation of the sons of Israel, to the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh. And they brought them all the congregation word, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they reported to him and said, we came to the land where you sent us, and it surely flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. But the people that live in the land are fierce, and the cities are fortified, very great. And also we have seen the children of Anak there. Amalek lives in the land of the Negev, and the Hittite, and the Jebusite, and the Amorites live in the hills, and the Canaanite is living by the sea and beside the Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, we will certainly go up and we will seize it for all, for we are well able to do it. And the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they sent an evil report out of the land which they had spied out to the sons of Israel, saying, the land in which we traveled to spy it out is a land eating up its inhabitants. And all the people we saw in its midst were men of stature. And we saw like giants there, the sons of Anak of the giants. And we were in our own eyes as grasshoppers. And so we were like that in their sight. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept during the night. And all the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the congregation said to them, oh, that we had died in the land of Egypt or in this wilderness. Oh, that we had died. And why is Yahweh bringing us into the land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our infants will be a prey. Is it not good for us to return to Egypt? And they said each to his brother, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. And Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation, the sons of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of who spied out the land, tore their garments. And they spoke to the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land into which we traveled and spied it out is an exceedingly good land. If Yahweh has delighted in us, then he will bring us into this land and will give it to us, a land which is flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against Yahweh, and you do not fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their defense is turned away from them, and Yahweh is with us. Do not be afraid of them. And all the congregation said, stone them with stones. And the glory of Yahweh appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation and to all the sons of Israel. And Yahweh said to Moses, how long will this people despise me? And how long will they continue not to believe in me? For all the signs which I have done in their midst, I shall strike it with pestilence and dispossess it, and I will make you a nation greater than these. And here it is. I mean, unbelievable. We are seeing the same thing today. Everybody loves Israel. Everybody wants to talk about Israel. Everybody wants to have their theories about Israel. But not many people want to come here. And when you come, what do? Don't go! There are giants in the land! There's Philistines! They're going to kill you! They don't want to come. They don't want to come. And Yahweh is holding out his hands and saying, this is it! We're coming back to the wilderness! The end is coming! I'm preparing my people! And what are they saying in Babylon? Stay in Babylon. Food's better. You know, better onions, better leeks. Stay in Babylon. We are seeing this fulfilled. It sends chills up my spine to read this and see it happening in our day. And see, knowing the result is going to be the same result. Drop down to verse 21 of that same chapter. It says, but as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahweh. And this is Yahweh's response for them for not wanting to go in. For all the men who are seeing my glory and my signs which I have done in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tried me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, they shall not see the land which I have sworn to their fathers. Yea, not one of those scorning me will see it. And my servant Caleb, because there is another spirit in him, and he is fully following me, I will bring him into the land which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it. And the Amalekite and the Canaanite who are living in the valley, tomorrow turn up and pull up stakes for yourself, going into the wilderness the way of the Red Sea. And Yahweh spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, how long will I bear with this evil company who are murmuring against me? I have heard the murmuring of the sons of Israel, which they are murmuring against me. Say to them, as I live, says Yahweh, as surely as you have spoken in my ears, so I will do to you. Your dead body shall fall in the wilderness, even all your numbered one, as to your whole number from 20 years old and upward, in that you have murmured against me. You shall certainly not come into the land which I have lifted up my hand to cause you to live in it, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. As for your infants, of who you said they'll be a prey, and I hear this all the time. You know, even people write, am I going to be responsible for these little children that are coming here at feast time? I said, no, I'm not responsible. Yahweh's responsible. I didn't make the command to come to Jerusalem 3 times in the year. Yahweh made it. And people are so worried about their children. Well, I come, Don, but I don't want to bring my children there. I'm afraid for my children. Whoever is afraid for their children about coming here and being blessed at feast time, listen to the scripture. As for your infants, of whom you said, they shall be a prey, I shall bring them in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. As for you, your carcasses will fall in this wilderness, and your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and you shall bear your fornications until your carcasses are wasted in the wilderness. By the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a day for a year, a day for a year, you shall bear your iniquities 40 years, and you shall know my alienation from you. I am Yahweh, I have spoken. I shall do this to all the evil company who have gathered against me, and they shall be brought to an end in this wilderness, and there they shall die. And the men whom Moses had sent to spy out the land, and who, when they returned, made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up an evil report against the land, even those men bringing an evil report of the land died by the plague before Yahweh. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive of those men that went to spy out the land. And Moses told these words to all the sons of Israel, and the people deeply mourned. You know, it is amazing to think about this, that the greatest miracle ever done in the history of man was the parting of the Red Sea, right? I mean, that Yahweh went before them, was their salvation, did all these things, and what, though we don't focus, what was the end result? Only two people out of 2.8 million went into the promised land. Two people! Two people out of 2.8 million went into the promised land. Joshua, an Ephraimite, and Caleb from Judah. Another showing of the two houses there. But two people out of 2.8 million, and everyone else perished in the wilderness. If you go to the book of Jude, just one verse, Jude 5. Look what he says. But I intend to remind you, you once knowing these things, that the Almighty, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, in the second place destroyed the ones not believing. So like I said, you know, when I look at people that are converting to Judaism, denying the Messiah, all these things, as much as I love the land here, I praise the Father for every day here, and I want to be here, I want to be here when the Messiah returns. I don't want to jeopardize anything for that. I don't want to be one of the rebels that are going to be weeded out in the wilderness. I don't want to be that. And what is it? It is fear today that is running the brethren's lives. Absolute fear of everything. You know, and I don't think I hear more of a question than we come to America about the fear of what's going on in the land here. And people that would love to come, they are just so afraid. You will not enter the promised land with fear. You will not. And like we said in our class, fear will immobilize you, and fear will make you make every wrong decision. Fear will just stop you from doing anything. And in the end, you're going to get the worst result anyway if you're running your life through fear. But you know, it says, to much is given, much is expected. The more is given, the more will be required. We have to realize the great accountability we have. You know, when you look at all the people since the wilderness over here, even as we're talking about the early congregation, in the next few weeks going through all these people, they didn't have even Bibles. They had to memorize books because there was no Bibles before the printing press. You know, you would have a Tanakh in a synagogue, you know, and maybe if someone was extremely, extremely wealthy, they can have a copy of the scriptures printed. And look at us today. I probably have easily 25 Bibles, you know, all together with all the different Bibles, and some we give out to people too. Concordance, lexicons, interlinears, all the different things we have today that we're blessed with, that we can sit around a table, not just with a Torah scroll from the synagogue, but we have so many things to compare and search and look, and there is more knowledge, just knowledge sake given, and spiritual knowledge today than there's ever been. Without a shadow of a doubt, like it says, kings and prophets would have loved to see what you see and didn't. But we are accountable. It brings a greater accountability. Because the person who didn't know as much and made the same mistake gets few stripes, but the person who knew better is going to get many stripes. And that's why the wilderness is there. It's there for our purification. And whether we believe it or not, it doesn't make a difference. People have told me before, I don't even believe that there's any Elohim in heaven. So it doesn't make a difference. Whether you believe it or not, it's not going to change the plan. Whether you believe he exists isn't going to change what he's going to do tomorrow. You know, I can believe there's no sun. Does that mean it's going to disappear? Of course not. So the fact that if we're not believing these things, it's only putting us in more dire situation. Let's go to Hebrews 3. We'll be ending up here in a few minutes, maybe another 10 minutes. Hebrews 3, because let's start looking at now the exhortation now in the New Testament about learning from these experiences from our brethren that didn't make it in the wilderness. Hebrews 3, 7 through 19. Hebrews 3, starting in verse 7. For this reason, even as the Holy Spirit says, today, if you will hear His voice, do not harden your hearts, as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness. There where your fathers tempted me, testing me, and saw my works 40 years. Because of this, I was angry with that generation, said, they always go astray in heart, and they did not know my ways, so I swore in my wrath, they will not enter my rest. These people will not be in the millennium. They are not going to be in the Ezekiel 37 resurrection. They will not be in His rest. Watch, brothers, lest perhaps shall be in any one of you a heart of evil unbelief in falling away from the living Elohim. How important is faith in the end time? Everything. Absolutely everything is our faith in our Father. But exhort yourself each day as long as it is being called today, that not any of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we have become sharers of the Messiah if truly we hold the beginning of the assurance firm to the end. As in the saying, today, if you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as in the provocation. For hearing, some provoked Him, but not all those coming out of Egypt through Moses. But with whom was He angry 40 years? Was it not with the ones sinning, those corpses fell in the wilderness? And to whom did He swear they would not enter His rest except those not obeying? And we see that they were not able to enter in because of unbelief. Chapter 4, Therefore let us fear, lest perhaps a promise left to enter into His rest, any of you might seem to come short. For indeed, we have had the gospel preached to us, even as they also. But the word did not profit those hearing, not having been mixed with faith in the ones who heard. So while they had the same gospel, they heard the same things, but if it's not mixed with faith, it's useless. It's absolutely useless. You have to have faith to enter the kingdom. We will have to trust that Yahweh is going to rain manna from heaven. We're going to have to trust the water will come out of the rock again. We are going to have to trust Him like we were going over the way little children do. Humility, trust, belief, all these things that children have. We're going to have to trust Him the same exact way. Let's go to Hebrews 11. A couple of chapters over. We'll see a little bit about who started the covenant of faith here, Abraham, and the kind of faith that Abraham has given us an example that we have to follow in. Hebrews 11 is starting in verse 8. Having been called out by faith, Abraham obeyed to go forth to a place which he was going to receive for an inheritance, and went out not understanding where he went. By faith he resided as a foreigner in a land of promise, living in tents, or tabernacles, with Isaac and Jacob, co-heirs of the same promise. So here it is. Did Abraham ask questions? Did Abraham say, how am I going to survive? Did Abraham ask where the next meal's coming from? Abraham get up and go. Abraham got up and walked. What did he do? The heirs of the promise, Isaac and Jacob, tabernacling in tents with them. For he looked for a city having the foundations of which the builder and maker is Yahweh. Are we looking for the same? Are we looking for an earthly sanctuary or a heavenly one? He looked for a city that the builder and the maker is Yahweh. Also, by faith, Sarah herself received power for conceiving seed by faith. Remember when she laughed? She didn't believe, but by faith, she received the power for conceiving and gave birth since she deemed the one having promised to be faithful. Because of her faith, she was able to give birth since she deemed the one having promised to be faithful. Because of this came into being from one, and that from one having died, seed even as the stars of the heaven in multitude and countless as the sand of the sea. So we see that that child of promise was what started the covenant for everybody. By faith. By the faith in Yahweh. We go down to verse 13. These all died by the way of faith. We read this last night.
not having received the promises, but seeing them afar off and being persuaded and having embraced and confessed that they were aliens and sojourners on the earth. For those saying such things make clear that they seek a fatherland. See, they don't just seek a home, they seek a fatherland. They seek a land, like I said, when we were in Greece and in Cyprus and in Italy. These places, they all have a country home for their children. And they have an inheritance to give the children. I'm sitting there thinking, where's my inheritance? Where's my home that I'm going to get when I get married? Because my great-great-great-great-great-granddaddy named Dan, because he sinned, I'm living in diaspora. But we seek a fatherland. We're not just seeking a place, we're seeking a fatherland. Because our father Abraham has an inheritance here, and our name is on it because we're a seed of Abraham. So we're not just seeking a place, we're seeking a fatherland. Okay, where am I? These all died by the way, having not received the promise, but seeing them afar off and being persuaded and having embraced and confessed that they are alien sojourners. For those saying such things make clear they seek a fatherland, verse 15, and truly if they remembered that from where they came out, they had time to return. But now they stretch forth to a better, that is a heavenly land. Therefore Yahweh is not ashamed of them to be called their Elohim, for he has prepared a city for them. And what are we living? Are we living for the earthly city, or are we living for the heavenly one? Are we going to believe in the promised seed? Or we're just going to live to the physical things. Exodus 14. We'll be ending up here. 5 more minutes. Exodus 14, starting in verse 11. In no greater place on earth can you do this than here. You know, the blessing yesterday, or 2 days ago, you know, we're at Mount Carmel, and we're reading the story of Eliyahu, right at the place where it happened. And what does he say? Stop dividing between two opinions. Stop dividing. Is what you have, do you have hope or do you have faith? Are you hoping there's a kingdom? Are you hoping that Yahweh is true? Or do you have faith? Do you believe it with all the inner part of your being? Because if you believe it, there's going to be an action that comes from it. And if Yahweh's Elohim, then serve Yahweh. If Baal's Elohim, serve him. But if you honestly believe the word of Yahweh, you are not going to live for this world because it's passing. Like I said, if you knew that within 10 years that they were going to come out with something that no one would need glasses, everyone's eyes would be fixed, would you go to school to become an optometrist? Of course not, if you really knew it was true. It's the same way here. If you know in a few short years that this kingdom will be here, why work for the earthly when there's such a job to your priesthood to the heavenly? Exodus 14, verse 11. And this is when Pharaoh came down to the Red Sea, and look what it says. And they said to Moses, were there no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What is this you have done to us to bring us out of Egypt? Is this not the word which we spoke to you while we were in Egypt, saying, go away from us and let us serve the Egyptians? For it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Do you feel that way? You feel it's better, you know, in Babylon to have a nice life, to have security, be able to pay your rent? Do you feel that it's better? Just leave us alone, Yahweh. I don't want to go in no wilderness. Hey, we're doing pretty good serving the Babylonians. Or is it the other way? Verse 13, and Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Take your stand and see the salvation of Yahweh, which he will prepare for you today. For as you see the Egyptians today, you shall not continue to see them again forever. Yahweh will fight for you, and you be silent. If we could just learn that one lesson in life, Yahweh will fight for us, and you be silent. Stand back and see the salvation of Yahweh. What side are we going to stand on? Going back to the trusting in the Babylonians, or seeing the salvation of Yahweh? Hebrews 12. Tying this in, we talked about first fruits. And we talked about Esau. And what did Esau do? He sold his birthright for a bowl of soup. For one fleshly desire. One time to fill his belly. And he gave away the most precious thing in the world. Not only to him, but his descendants. How many grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren have suffered because of that one decision. Hebrews 12 and verse 16. He says, "Not that not any fornicator or profane one is Esau, who for one feeding gave up his birthright. For you know also that afterwards, desiring to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place of repentance, although seeking it with tears." And people have asked me, why didn't Yahweh take his repentance? Because it wasn't true. Like I said, just like in court, when people are in court, sure, they're all sorry once they're caught. And it says when the father comes, there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Not because people are sorry they didn't obey Yahweh. They're sorry that they're getting punished. They're sorry because you know what? The end didn't come yet today. You have another day. It's not the tribulation today. The end didn't come. And if you're really sorry, then stop doing it. Like Elijah said, get off the fence. Start serving Yahweh today. But if you wait for that day when the bottom falls out, and then there's the weeping and gnashing of teeth, the father's going to know it's not sincere. He's going to know you're only weeping because you love your flesh so much you want to save your own life. If you go to Proverbs 24, Proverbs 1:24, that's exactly what he talks about in the end time. I'll start in verse 22. "How long will you love to be simple, you simple ones? And will scorners desire scorn for themselves? And will fools hate knowledge? Turn back to my warning. Behold, I will pour out my spirit to you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called and you refused. I have stretched out a hand and none inclines. But you have ignored all my counsel. You did not want my warning. I also will laugh in your calamity, and I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity arrives like a hurricane, when distress and constraint come on you, then they will call on me and I will not answer. They will seek me early and they will not find me. Instead, they hated knowledge and chose not the fear of Yahweh. They did not want my counsel. They despised all my reproof. And they shall eat of the fruit of their own way and be filled with their own lusts. For the going astray of the simple kills them and the ease of fools destroys them." Very, very clear. Very, very clear. That because when Yahweh called, they did not answer. When he put out his hands, they refused to hear it. It should scare us to death when we clearly see we're first fruits and we see how many first fruits failed in their mission. When we see how many in the end time fail in their mission, it should scare us. And it doesn't surprise me, Philippians 2:12, that says, "Work out your salvation with fear and trembling." It's a sober time we're living in. Because if we're not sobered, if we don't love the truth, what's going to happen? Yahweh's going to send strong delusion. We're going to believe the lie. Not just a lie. Remember what I said in Hebrew, whenever the "the" is there, the perfect article? It's the lie. What is the lie that's going to be believed? Yeshua is not the son of Yahweh. It's already started. What did Yeshua say? I got a fire to light, and what is it to me if it's already lit? You know, he's got a fire to burn here. And what is it to him if it's already lit? And that fire has been lit now for a while and it's starting to go out of control. Denying his deity, denying his presence, denying his preexistence. And I'm telling you, in the end, even among our brethren, we'll deny that he's the son of Yahweh. It's already started. Full congregations we know of that the pastors have taken them away and completely gone to Judaism and denied Yeshua as the Messiah. And it's only the beginning. We haven't seen anything yet. But when we look at this, my question, as I said in the beginning and I say it now, how are you doing in the wilderness? How are you doing in the wilderness? It's something that we should be thinking about every day, praying about every day, and making sure, like I said, that we're not going to fail where our forefathers did. And like Elijah said, stop dividing between two opinions. If Yahweh be Elohim, serve him. And if Baal be Elohim, serve him. But stop dividing between two opinions. Even the Laodicean, Yahweh says, "I wish you were cold or hot." To the ones that are totally blinded, well, at least he could have more mercy. To the ones that are on fire, there is first fruits. But the ones that are lukewarm, the ones that he's giving all this blessing to, the ones he's calling to the wedding supper, and they're not accepting, he's going to spit them out of his mouth. Like he says. So let's be the called, chosen, faithful. Let's desire to be the ones that are faithful. let's be about the word of Yahweh, and let's just praise His name every day of our life. Praise Yahweh.